volume modes.
Again, the idea here is to immunize you against the common and even not so common way salespeople manage to fail. It takes a lot of introspection and honesty to hear this and then see if it applies to you. People want to hear the good things about them, but they don't want to admit the bad things about them. People achieve some type of mastery in life. Well, I only prefer the latter. People that achieve the mastery in life will prefer the latter. They'll look for what they can improve in themselves. They're pretty much familiar with what they're good at, but they're always looking for ways to improve. Number 21, I call this the manic depressive roller coaster. What happens is that you get this huge rush, especially when you're a commission-only salesperson and you make a sale. I mean, it's a victory. Sometimes you wait a long time for a sale, so you get all up, you're all fired up. You get almost manic, invincible, everything's going your way, life is great. Okay? And then a lot of times you could take that energy forward with you and it'll help you. You'll have that confidence. And but sooner or later, reality's going to hit. It's a numbers game. You're not going to close them all. And after a while, if you don't close them, you enter into a depression stage where nothing goes right. Nothing's ever going to go right. You're not sure about the job anymore. You have self-doubts. Maybe your mother was right. You should have went into horticulture after all. You go up, you go down. You go up, you go down. A lot of times when I go up, they figure they don't have to work so hard anymore because, hey, this is easy. It's not no problem. So they're able to, sabotage their call volume that way. And then when they're down, they don't want to make calls. They have call reluctance because they're getting rejected. Every time they pick up the phone, they get an electric shock. How often would you want to pick up a phone if every time you did that, you got an electric shock? So you avoid the phone. In Buddhism, they have something called equanimity. Don't get too excited when things go your way, and then don't get too depressed when things don't. So, oh, wow, look at that. Something good happens. Nice weather. That's nice. That's great. Oh, look at that. It's cloudy and windy, cold. Huh? There you go. Sometimes it's cloudy, windy, or cold. Right? You try to even out the hills and the valleys. Have a more equal, a more steady state. Prevents you from overcompensating one way or the other. So how can you achieve this equanimity as applied to your life and sales? I have a little trick, okay? I call it the 10-second rule. If you make a deal, you ring the bell, you have 10 seconds to jump up and down and scream and see how great everything is, and then you get back on the phone, shut up and start dialing. And when you make a call and all falls apart, you don't get the deal after all. You can cry in your beer and you can self-flagellate with one of them whips and chains and wail and pull out your hair for 10 seconds. And you can get back on the phone and make another call. This forces you to limit the amount of time you spend in useless activity. Number 22 is money. People run out of money. They take a job. They do it out of desperation because they really need money. They can't find anything else. They take a commission job knowing full well that they can't pay the rent at the end of the month. So what happens is they get desperate. And they start clinging to everything, attached to every call. And they make it a do or die thing on that call. That if they don't get it, they're going to kill themselves or whatever. They're too desperate. They just don't have the financial resources to make it. They can't do this kind of work. It's entrepreneurial work. It takes time. There's a ramp time. So they just basically run out of money and they leave. That's the failure mode for a surprising number of salespeople who just don't understand the nature of entrepreneurial work. You have to have some kind of a nest egg, some resources to go on to invest. If any other business, can you imagine if you want to open a retail store and you have 100 grand and it costs you, 98 grand to put the building up and fix, do the interior layout and stock it with merchandise and hire people, and then you're in business and you got 2 grand left, which means you got 4 days now to make that business work before you go out of business again. because you run out of money. That's just ridiculous. And yet people won't, you know, think twice about doing that in sales. You're better off if you're in that kind of a situation. You're better off going camping for a week or two and having a fresh mind and a clear head, so when you stand on an employment line, you know, you'll be all tanned and relaxed. At least you're not going to do it in 2 weeks. You're just trying to do the impossible. Everything's going to be, you're going to be worse. You'll be in worse shape than you were before. Closely related to this is desperation, number 23. And usually it's desperation is involved in the money. So it's kind of like they run out of money, that's the fact, but the desperation is a result. The fear just takes over, and then they can be sensed on the phone that this person's just, something's wrong on this call. What's wrong with this guy? He just sounds too desperate. People won't get shied away. You can relate this to dating. A young man can't find a girlfriend to save his life for month after month. And finally, you know, he gets introduced, he has this girlfriend, and now 19 girls right after that all want to date him. This is a really common phenomenon. It also happens like you can't get a job, you can't get a job, you can't get a job, and finally get a job offer, right behind it are 15 job offers. It seems like people can almost sense that you're, on one hand, you're desperate, there's something wrong with you, you're almost tainted. Nobody wants to touch you. Eric Clapton has one of his songs says, "No one wants to know you when you're down and out." Good song. In sales, you have to communicate enthusiasm, not desperation and fear. Confidence. And in any negotiation, if you're not willing to walk, you're loose. So when you're trying to compete for a job or a sale, you have to cling to it because you can't walk. Just puts you in a position that other people can sense. 24, I call this touchy-feely-phobic. A phobia is when something is repelled. And philic, the word philic means you're attracted. So like paper towels are water-philic, they attract water almost. Whereas a plastic sheet repels water almost. It won't attract at all. So what does that mean? That means a lot of people out there think that business has to be logical and rational, especially if they had any kind of engineering or science training, or they were overly analytic like lawyers, or any numbers people, finance majors, accounting, and so on. They would like the world to be logical and rational. The only problem is it's not. Even the physical world is a lot less logical and rational than you might assume. When you get down to it, you get down to quantum mechanics, everything becomes probability waves, influenced by thought. Action at a distance, all the so-called rational, logical, Newtonian worldview crumbles. Take it from a science major. Yeah, you can say that logical and rational applies to engineering and mechanics and all that stuff if you stay within the confines of the Newtonian world. But as soon as you drift out of that, everything falls apart again. It almost sounds like Eastern mysticism, and it's all true. There's 6.5 billion people on this planet, and all but a handful of very weird genetic defects are emotional. There are some people that have no emotions whatsoever. They're almost like robots or Mr. Spock on Star Trek. But for normal people, which is, again, the vast majority, they're completely emotional. And I'll prove it to you. I need transportation so I can get to and from work and other places. I decide I want to buy a car. A rational person would buy an inexpensive economy car, because if you look at the cost per ownership, the cost per mile, it doesn't cost that much. Cheap to insure, easy to maintain. Good gas mileage, uses a little bit of oil, and on and on and on. It's a very rational choice. And yet, even in an energy situation where you have $4 a gallon gas, the vast majority of people are buying bigger cars because, why? They want to be comfortable. They want status. The ultimate example, I think, is a Corvette. Here you got a car that's really expensive. As a matter of fact, it's overpriced. You need a really nice car for $20,000-$25,000 or something for $60,000. I mean, it's not that much nicer than the other cars. A lot of the same components are in cars half the price, but it's a Corvette. It's only got two seats. It's got a minuscule trunk. It's low riding, so you can't see over the traffic, and it rides rough. It's very expensive to maintain, so it's not that reliable a car. It gets lousy gas mileage. It has high insurance rates. It attracts cops like a magnet. You can't tow with it. I don't know any rational, logical reason for a Corvette, yet they sell. Every one they make every year, they sell out. Why? Because when you're 45 and you got divorced, and you're out trolling for young girls, you get the comb over, you know what I mean? You go to the gym, buy some new clothes, and you buy that. Trying to restore your masculinity, it's a completely emotional thing. Why do you buy that? Well, I want to get chicks. That's what they think. They think that car is not me, and sometimes it does. That's the funny thing. If you look across the board on houses, who needs, quote-unquote, a 5,000-square-foot McMansion for husband, wife, and one child, or even two? It must be, what, prestige, I've made it, look at my house. Totally irrational behavior, and yet that the housing market, a 1,500-square-foot house used to be considered a pretty nice house. And now it has to be 4,000-square-foot. You have to have walk-in closets and a jacuzzi and a master bath suite. You have to have a gourmet kitchen. Let's look at kitchens. These people go out to eat all the time, and yet they have these kitchens that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. They don't have a stove. They have a $12,000 solid stainless steel work of art. It's a commercial range. You could stick that range in Paris, a restaurant in Paris, and it will last for 50 years, or 100 years, or 500 years. The thing's not going anywhere. It will outlast the pyramids. Who needs that in their home? Who needs a $4,000 automated cappuccino maker? The answer is nobody. Who needs a yacht, let alone big yachts? Or a 60-foot, $800,000 mobile home that gets like 5 miles to a gallon? You ever hear of a motel? So, I mean, it's just, you can go on and on and on. But there's a lot of things people buy that are irrational. Look at poor people, what they do with their money. Lottery tickets. Is there any rational reason to buy a lottery ticket? Lottery tickets are for people who have basically given up all hope on life. They know they'll never make it. They'll squander their last dollar with a 1 out of 10 million long shot. You have a better chance of being hit by a meteor than winning that lottery. Anybody with any rationality at all would know you're never going to win that lottery, but what they cling to is hope. They're buying hope for a buck, which is a completely emotional reaction. It makes sense from the emotional point of view. It's as irrational as it is from a logical point of view. It's perfectly sensible from an emotional point of view. And I can go on and on. Maybe I will. No, I won't. So then you come to a product like Wall. It's a tax recovery service where you help companies get research and development or export tax credits. They fail to claim and maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you're talking to the CFO and the CEO and the law firm, and you, of course, you would assume that was a rational, logical sale. Well, it's not. They may not do it because they're too, quote-unquote, busy, or they just don't believe you. Or they look at it, I don't know, they get emotional because, well, we could do that ourselves, or, you know, they don't want to admit that they failed to maximize their tax gains, so they have to, like, bury their ego. So behind all this rationality, is an emotional human being behind the lawyer's desk and the CPA's little visor or whatever he wears. Is an emotional human being, and they act emotionally. The only way you could really rise and be in the top 1% in sales is to fully, totally comprehend the emotional aspect of life has primacy over all other. And that all sales are emotional sales, ultimately, because ultimately people make the decisions. Unless you're in an automated bidding process dealing with computers, it's an emotional sale. If you're bidding on a government contract and it literally is automated, then it's not emotional. But as soon as you put a human being in the loop, it's emotional again. If you yourself don't want to admit when you have emotions. You've been trained, especially men, to never show your emotion. You shun all talk of emotion. Matter of fact, this talk makes you very uncomfortable. Just the conversation itself is almost like talking, as far as men goes, about some detailed gynecological topic at a symposium. They would sit there and squirm in their chair. Oh, I don't want to. Oh, that's awful. You know, we'll talk about disease modes and things. That would freak them up because they're not gynecologists. They don't look at it that way. And for men to be talking about the emotional aspects of life is just about that bad. Therefore, they're emotion phobic. And therefore, they're handicapped when it comes to sales. They're at a huge disadvantage. For most women are more in touch because they're more socially acceptable to be emotional as a female in our culture and most other cultures. And they're just wired differently. They have different roles genetically, like childbearing, whereas men didn't have that role. So men have to work 10 times harder than women, but they all have to overcome. Even women, though, especially if they're MBAs or trained in finances, they all had the emotional beat out of them. They had to feel that, well, in order for me to get ahead in the world, I can't be perceived as a mere woman because women are held back. Therefore, I have to act like a man. First thing they act like a man is they, besides walking a little bit differently, the first thing they learned about is never show your emotions. You can't deal with men and cry at a meeting. So they end up doing what men did, which is completely turn themselves off in their emotion. They almost come schizoid. They have like two brains now. They have the woman and they have this front they put on. And then they go forward in the business world and they look for rational reasons for people to buy and this and that. And they never hit the high level of success they could if they knew the emotional. Some people just don't have that emotional IQ. And there are about 8 different forms of intelligence, and emotional intelligence is one of them. That's another topic that I'm not going to get into right now. Some people just don't have it. They just don't have the empathy, or they're not in touch. And other people just, whatever they have is totally atrophied. They could have been emotional as a child at one point, and they had a beat out of them. Act like a man. What's wrong with you? You're a sissy. So they've had that, men typically have a beat out of them. If your emotions are something you're not supposed to have, how come you have them? To understand people, you have to understand their emotional state of being and their state of mind. If you don't see that, if you can't appeal to emotional arguments, you're going to be wildly ineffective as salespeople. Again, you could be a decent salesperson, but you'll never be a great one. You'll never get into the top 10, let alone the top 1 without this. 25. This is another cultural phenomenon. It's called conflict phobic. People were trained to go along to get along. Don't make waves. Repress your anger. You don't want to have an incident. You don't want to be noticed. So they avoid conflict like it's the plague. Traditional Japan society all bow to each other, all nice and polite stuff. That's because everybody's walking on samurai swords, and if you didn't have an overt display of social respect, you were inviting a fight. The kind of fight where you have your head chopped off. Nowadays in society, many people have this beat out of them during grade school, especially grade schools are run right now. They basically emasculate boys. They try to make them act like girls. They try to say, you can't fight, you can't do this, you can't make noise. They try to make them into something they're not. Is it any wonder when they get up, and a lot of them are raised by single mothers. They had too many females around. They lost the male influence, so they lost the ability to relate to contact sports and conflict. Now, not all of them, but a big percentage of them. But in general, you're beat down at work. You can't express your emotions. You can't make conflict because you get fired. So now you get into an entrepreneurial commission sales job, going toe-to-toe with CEOs or whatever. And you just lost the edge. You have no ability to force deals to happen. And by definition, a closer makes sales happen. What does that mean? Well, if you're waiting around for sales to happen, you'll get a deal here and a deal there. But if you want to be a top 1% and actually close all your presentations, close every one of your prospects, you're going to have to find ways to make the sale happen. That will often involve conflict because the prospect might give you an objection. Well, why should I do that? I don't know if I should do that. Oh, yeah, well, maybe you're right. I can see your point. No, I'll tell you why you should do it. Because this is in the best interest of your business. And what you're doing right now is avoiding making that decision. I'm just curious how, you know, are you the CEO? Did I get the wrong number? These kind of techniques where you're really getting their face. And I could, on this particular session, I'm not going to do that in any detail. I'll do that some other time. But you're avoiding conflict, but here's how that works typically. Number one, all great salespeople do this instinctively, intuitively, or by training, or both, or all three. What will happen typically out of five like that? Two will get pissed off and hang out with you. And out of the other three, one probably will say, I don't want to do it then. And maybe two will say yes. Whereas before, you might out of five, maybe you get zero or one deals. Now you get two out of five. That's a huge difference. You just doubled the amount of sales. Why? Because you weren't going to take no for an answer. You're going to force it. But you have to be willing to endure conflict. There's nothing wrong with conflict. What you should do is embrace conflict. Conflict is your friend. In this job, you want to make noise, unless you want mediocrity. And like I say, mediocrity, you need no training. You could be mediocre on your own. You don't need to do that. Listen to this. CEOs especially thrive on conflict. They're basically almost like warriors. They're the ones who work their way to the top. They had to cross the minefields and the politics and or raise money or take the big risks. They're pretty adventurous, in most part, stubborn, risk takers, opinionated. And they worship themselves because they know they've been right. So look at me, I'm all powerful. I must be right all the time. You got to deal with people like that, get them to do it something. You're going to have to mix it up. So how do you regain your ability to embrace conflict? Most people have to learn and unlearn. They need to learn certain things and unlearn a lot of what they've been of their cultural programming. The best way and easiest way is to get involved in a contact sport, a rigorous martial art, boxing, wrestling, hockey, where you drink a lot of beers first and go out and start fights. That works. Something to that effect, where you're out re-engaging with the physical, where you overcome that fear that every conflict ends in disaster, because it doesn't. The same guy you're hit with a hockey stick a minute you're drinking beers with after the game. Or you're bowing to after you've been beating each other up, you bow and go and sit down somewhere in karate. But what it does for you mentally is it puts you on a fine edge. You have this kind of presence that you don't get elsewise. You have a presence that, hey, I'm here and I'm to be taken seriously. I'm not a mealy mouth, little worm, kind of a little rabbit scurrying around. Number 26 is lack of perspective. I've seen people take jobs, make three phone calls, and then quit. Well, I can't do this. Okay. Well, this guy said the product's no good, it's way overpriced, therefore it's no good. I must have made a mistake, so I quit. Or they have a bad day and they think it's going to be like that all week, or the bad week's going to be the month. They get things out of perspective. They get overly optimistic. Oh, look at this. The guy said, yes, this is going to be easy to sell. No, it's not. Just because you ran across one prospect that didn't resist that much and wanted to do this doesn't mean the product's easy to sell. Any more than having 10 people say, I don't want it, or I don't need it, or it's not a good product, or whatever, doesn't mean you can't sell. There's a certain amount of statistics involved here. You have to keep things in perspective, and that's almost like cognitive therapy, where you have to think through the issue. Has the company been around a long time? Yes. Do they sell out of product? Yes. Have other people sold it? Yes. Then if I make 20 calls in a row and I get nothing but rejection, did I call the right people? And am I doing the right thing on the phone? Or is it just about I'm just not good at it yet? So you have to kind of think through the situation before you make wild decisions. Put things in perspective. It's a failure mode in that if you don't, you can very easily make a rash decision. Some people have a bad week, and then they basically ruin 2 months worrying about it, obsessing about it. They live in fear that they're going to make another call, so they can actually create a month or 2 month slump out of a bad day. You have to keep reminding yourself, look at the, you know, put it in perspective, look at it from a higher point of view and what's really happening there. 27, yeah, one of my favorites, easy money. I get countless resumes, and I'm continually amazed now, not just because they job hop 3 months here, 2 months there, 6 months here, 5 months here, 3 months there. I see people out of college, they got 6 jobs in 2 years. Why in the hell would I want to hire someone who's changed jobs 6 times in 2 years? I mean, that people do what they're going to do. If they're a job hopper, they're going to be a job hopper. They're going to quit this job. They'll badmouth me and the company and go out to some other job. But really what they're doing is the endless search for easy money. And by the way, what else really amazes me is that they're stupid enough to include all those on their resume. They're not even smart enough to, like, you know, just leave a few of those jobs off. I think they're almost like, think it's to their advantage. Oh, look at this. I have 6 different jobs I've done. None of them successfully. What they're looking for is they're in an endless cycle for easy money. And once they are attracted to easy money, it's basically one of the most potent addictions known to man. It can basically ruin your life. If you ever had a high-paying job and you got lucky, you just lucked out into a job and you made a bunch of money and the job was easy, like during the internet boom, say, and all of a sudden that gravy train came to a halt. And then you're thrust out into the marketplace again, finding out that, hey, where's that next thing? You'll never be satisfied with another job again. There's a lot of people who are business development, quote-unquote, experts with their little MBAs, going from venture-funded company, internet boom, to another venture-funded company, getting promised all these stock crashes, but in the meantime being overpaid. These people are ruined for life. They're 28 years old, no work experience, or get paid $120,000 a year. I think a lot of those people end up as mortgage brokers. And now they're all unemployed mortgage brokers. One of the real estate agents and the mortgage broker. And then they're looking for the next easy money game. And they're basically damaged goods. They're basically people that if you hire are never going to succeed. Anybody who gambles, I personally detest gambling. I hate it. But as a libertarian, I'm happy to make it legal. Go ahead, do whatever you want. I wouldn't have to stay involved with it, though. That's just my opinion. But at a personal level, I detest gambling, because here's why. I don't want something for nothing. It'll ruin my life. So even if I win, I don't want to make my money that way. I don't want to win the lottery. I don't want to go gambling in Vegas, because I didn't earn anything. I might have won, but what I did is just temporarily beat the odds. And then if you continue to gamble, you're simply going to lose all your money. But even worse than losing the money, it's like being a crack addict. Now you're addicted to crack. And it's an addiction you'll never shake, because you'll never get that out of your system that all I have to do is go to Vegas and make some easy money again. So why every time you get a job and it's challenging and it's time to bust your ass and work hard, you'll quit. You've literally ruined your life. Anybody who gets passed from grade to grade or gets a passing score on a test they didn't deserve, or was told all the time by their teachers how wonderful they are, even though they were mediocre, was developing this habit, the self-esteem crisis, that they should get things easy, that things should be easy for them. And then they go out in the world and they find out it's not easy and they get beat up bad. Some of them come out and they're able to survive it, but a lot of them, they just fall. They're done. Their lives have been ruined. The number one killer in sales is the search for easy money. Because there isn't any. If there is anything called easy money, people eventually find out about it and all start doing that by the law of supply and demand. It would adjust itself. It could only be easy money temporarily. Like there's easy money in the mortgage business. And then 14 million people all jumped into that market and hoarded out completely to the point where nobody can make any money. And then the bottom fell out. So instead of one mortgage rep for every 18 real estate agents, there's like 18 mortgage reps for every 18 real estate agents. Everybody went after it. Oh, you can make all this money. I just make phone calls. It killed it. Most mortgage reps right now are unemployable. There are people who came into that business for easy money. The easy money's gone. And as soon as they'll come and they'll say, I want a job with you. But as soon as they find out it's difficult, they're gone again. They're just like the biz dev guys in the internet craze. They're damaged goods, low probability of success. And if that's you, I hope it is you. I hope you're listening to this call. I mean every word I said to you personally. It's a personal thing now. You need to be deprogrammed. 28, salary. I can understand salaries for lots of categories of workers. Like, you're not going to have a registered nurse work on commission, okay? How many bedpans did you change today, or dressings did you change, or whatever? It just wouldn't make any sense. It would be a conflict of interest, too. But in sales, unless you have a long sales cycle, or you have a situation where they can't measure your results directly, to give someone a salary, usually what will happen is if they can live on a salary, that's about what they'll hit their comfort zone, they'll just stay there. They won't go any further. The way salaries work is that if I had a commission sales job where you can make 10 grand a month if you sell 10 deals, or I can give you, I mean, 2 grand a month plus 500 deal. A lot of people take the 2 grand plus the 500. Now if they make 10 sales, they make 7 grand instead of 10. So there's a break-even point there, where the commission-only guy only has to sell 7 deals to make 7 grand. I mean, 7 deals, so at 7 sales, that's the break-even point. From that point on, the commission-only guy is worth more. There's a real strong incentive for that person to sell, because if they don't make any sales, they get zero. An employer can afford the higher commission rate, because the employee is taking the risk. As you all know, in investments and everything else, if you take the risk, you get compensated by a higher return. So a commission-only pay plan inherently is for closers. Closers want salaries because they know they're not going to sell, they know they're lazy, they're not going to make a lot of calls, they know they can't close anyway. They just as soon have the salary. The problem for you, though, is that salaries nowadays, if you need 20 grand a month to live and you sell 20 deals, right? You're only going to make 12 grand at the other plan, and that's not enough to make a middle-class lifestyle when you have two or three kids who want to buy a house in a lot of market areas. You can adjust these numbers up and down, but the point is, what basically happens is that because you failed to take the risk, you failed to get the big upside. In almost all salary gigs, you'll be lucky to make a living. You'll basically get to live in the middle class and not anything further. It's guaranteed poverty. And with the middle class rapidly receding before our eyes, if you don't take some kind of risk, you're going to be going backwards. Just think about flour and rice. Price is doubling, gas is $4 a gallon. Sooner or later, this tape's going to be humorous because gas will be at $6 or $8 probably. And I'll be laughing like hell at $4 gas. I'll have to go in here and edit the tape. Salaries are guaranteed poverty for most people because if you fail to take the risk, you're not going to be in that top slice of the income pyramid that enables you to maintain your standard of living or increase it in the face of a global onslaught, global competition and increased prices for commodities and whatnot. Salaries are dead ends. For people who are school teachers and firefighters, in most cases, they're going to be squeezed mercilessly out of the middle class as the years go by because their salaries are not going to keep up. And it's already not. Most teachers in a lot of nice areas can't afford to live in the communities they teach in. They have to bust them in. Salary is a guaranteed poverty.